This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The Democratic National Convention is just 3 weeks away. A lot has changed since we first learned Milwaukee would be the host city. The pandemic has forced much of the convention to go virtual. All of the large events have been canceled, and delegates have been told to stay home. What convention week in Milwaukee will really look like remains to be seen. But what we do know is that conventions are a significant part of the election process. To talk more about conventions and how this one could play out, WUWM's Mayon Silver spoke with Elaine K. Mark. She's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute and the author of Primary Politics. She's been a member of the Democratic National Committee and the DNC's Rules Committee since 1997. She starts by explaining why political conventions are held.
Well, there's a very important legal point. The formal nomination by a convention is what gets the presidential candidate on all 50 ballots and 51 in the District of Columbia. So in other words, if you're a presidential candidate running without an established political party, you can get on the ballot, but you've got to collect hundreds of thousands of signatures to do it. So if you're running as a Democrat, a Republican, a Green Party member, there's a couple other parties, the bar is very low for qualifying. It means that once you receive the formal nomination of your party, you are automatically on all the ballots. And if you choose to take it, you automatically receive federal funds to help run your election.
A lot of people may think that when they went to vote in Wisconsin's presidential primary on April 7th, they were directly voting for either Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or another candidate, but they weren't. They were voting for delegates, not candidates. Can you explain what that means and how it plays out at the upcoming convention?
Well, you know, the vote these days, it wasn't always the case, but in the modern era, the vote for Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders does mean that you are voting for delegates pledged to Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, or Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or whoever. That's mostly what it means. But you are electing individual human beings, and things change. The primary season, remember, takes place over 6 months. So it is entirely possible that somebody you voted for in March may no longer be a candidate by the time you get to your convention in August. So then you're a delegate and you are free to choose whichever candidate you want to vote for when the convention happens. So there's that. Secondly, there's the unusual situation. I mean, maybe the candidate who looked like, you know, the perfect candidate in March or April, by August, it turns out they haven't paid their taxes or they have illegitimate children or, you know, who knows what the scandal might be. And you might decide as a delegate that you really can't vote for that person. So there's a variety of things that could happen between your vote and the time that the delegates actually meet in Milwaukee or wherever. They're pretty unusual. Usually, if you vote for Bernie Sanders, you can bet that your delegate will go to the convention and vote for Bernie Sanders as well.
Is there any chance to rescind a candidate once they're formally nominated if some drastic thing happens after the convention?
Yeah, the procedure is the same for both political parties. If for some reason the candidate who's nominated can't run, I mean, obviously if they die, if they have a stroke and are incapacitated, or if something just horrible is found out about them and people say, hey, we don't want this person nominated, and forces them to withdraw, then the Republican National Committee and the Democratic National Committee would gather together and they would choose the nominee of the party.
And that goes all the way up until when? Like a week before November?
Yeah, a week before November. I mean, suppose the candidate drops dead of a heart attack, you know, the week before the election. There would be an emergency meeting of the Democratic National Committee. It would be, in this day and age, it would be done remotely, probably. And people would cast their ballot for a new nominee.
And what's the point of being a Bernie Sanders delegate, for instance, in this year's convention if you're pretty low on numbers?
Well, you still have an influence on the platform. I mean, Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden have been working hard together. They've had a whole series of task force to put together the platform. In an ordinary time, you would be going to the convention. You would be meeting other like-minded delegates. You would be planning for other races down the road, congressional races, congressional primaries, governor's races, etc. I mean, the thing about a convention, it is the one time quadrennially that people come together from all across the country as one political party. The rest of the time, frankly, when there's no presidential race, political parties operate at the state level. Right? Their main interests are who's running for governor, who's running for attorney general, who's running for that open Senate seat, etc. So remember that we are a federal system, and the quadrennial conventions are the one time that the parties are a national party.
Let's imagine that there was no pandemic. Let's imagine life is purring along as normal. What would be happening at our convention in Milwaukee in August? What would it look like?
Well, people would be arriving. They would be on big buses. They would be going to their hotels, to the convention hotels, to the delegations. There would be lots of receptions, lots of parties, lots of events all over Milwaukee and, frankly, the surrounding area. And people would be getting ready for the big opening of the convention, which is always on Monday night. And there we would have probably the keynote speaker, whoever that would have been. And who knows, there may still be a keynote speaker, but it won't be live.
So that's what the convention in Milwaukee would have looked like. Let's fast forward into reality. What are you anticipating will actually happen in Milwaukee's virtual convention?
Well, I have already gotten a Google notice to sign up and register so that I can cast my ballot. And we will cast ballots beginning in August on all the convention business. We'll vote for a platform, we'll vote for rules, we'll vote on any credentials fights that there are, and we will vote on the presidential candidate, and we'll vote, by then I suspect we'll have a nominee, we'll vote on the vice presidential candidate as well. So the voting will all take place remotely. Some states are thinking about having state meetings of their delegation. So instead of, you know, going to Milwaukee, those of us from Massachusetts, we would maybe meet in Boston. Maybe people from New York would meet in Albany. I don't know if that's actually going to happen because some people think that's probably as problematic as going to Milwaukee. So that may not happen. But basically think of them in two ways, right? There's the business of the convention that must get done. It is party business. It is central to the nomination, to a legal nomination. And it is very similar, frankly, in both political parties. So you got to get that business done. And then there is the message part of the convention, which is usually the primetime offerings during the week where the hall is completely packed and there's a beautiful stage built and lots of red, white, and blue all over the place. And you know, it's a big show. And most Americans, they just tune in for that part of the convention. The business part of the convention is usually it's either pretty cut and dried and non-controversial, or sometimes it is controversial if there's a intra-party fight over the platform or a rule or something like that. But I expect this year it's going to be pretty cut and dry.
For the part that most Americans tune into, the big the big show, as you said. What do you think is gained and lost for Democrats and for Milwaukee with the convention going virtual?
Well, the second one is the bigger loss than the first one. Obviously, Milwaukee is going to lose the opportunity to, you know, present itself as a terrific city. It's going to lose a lot of money. I just feel very sorry for all the people who work in hotels and restaurants and places like that that should have been making a big pile of money this summer and won't be because there will not be an influx of 20,000 people into the city. So I definitely think, you know, there's a financial and somewhat of a prestige loss. I mean, this would have been a big show for Milwaukee. Every indication is they were going to do a great job. And it really is, it is too bad. On the other hand, it is pretty much something that had to happen, as you can see in the other party. They're in chaos about their convention, how to do their convention. Jacksonville told them, just told them, don't come, essentially. And the president said, okay, we won't go to Jacksonville. So now nobody knows what's going on with that convention. I think, Frank, as sad as it is for Milwaukee, I think that Tom Perez and the National Party made the right choice to make this decision early. Having said that, I think the challenge before the party right now is to present as interesting and compelling television for the week of that convention as they would have had there been an actual convention going on. To somehow get people to tune in, to listen to people who represent the future of the party, to listen to the, just get people to tune in and pay attention. And I think that that's a, I think that that's a big challenge. I'm hoping that they will consult the best image makers and movie makers in the country to help them, you know, do that. But I think that's the challenge, is just getting out the message without the backdrop and the drama of the everybody in one city.
And Democrats, including Jason Ray, he's the secretary of the Democratic National Committee from Milwaukee. He has said that the Democrats' number one goal is voting President Trump out of office. How do you think this virtual convention would best contribute to that aim?
Well, the very fact that the Democrats are having a virtual convention out of concern for the safety of people, not just the convention delegates, but all the people, from the people who serve you beer in the convention hall to the people in restaurants and hotels, all the people in Milwaukee who would be very, very much at risk as an influx of people from all over the world come in, possibly carrying a dangerous virus. The Democrats made the responsible decision there. The Republicans are still insisting that somehow they're going to bring all their delegations to Milwaukee, even though their members of Congress are saying, "Oh no, we're some of them are saying we're not coming." The very contrast of the two conventions themselves, I think, is going to add to what is already a quite prevalent feeling in the country that Donald Trump has not been a good leader during this crisis, and that's when you really need your president to be a good and a strong leader, and he just hasn't been. I mean, he lacks empathy, and he lacks government experience relevant to the challenge before him. He's really failed on the emotional part, and he's failed on the practical part.
Of course, you say that as a member of the Democratic National Committee. On the flip side, what would the RNC and the Republican National Committee have to do to sort of boost up President Trump's image via their convention? Do you see there's any way that they'd be able to do that?
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. We, as a political scientist now, I can tell you that presidential elections or elections for prime minister all over the world are almost always about the performance of the incumbent. When there's an incumbent running, you can't sort of change the topic because they're there. There's a record. There's 4 years. People can decide, did you like the last 4 years or not? And you know, the Republican Party is very skilled at messaging. Donald Trump is obviously a great salesman and very, very skilled at messaging and getting into people's, you know, hearts and minds. But when you are an incumbent, that is not as important as reality. And the reality here is pretty bad. We have an out-of-control pandemic, one that Europe has managed to contain and we can't. We have unparalleled unemployment that is just now going up again. There's damage to all sorts of segments of the economy. We've got children who are not going to school. I mean, we're in a mess. And, you know, I think that, yeah, they will try very hard, I'm sure. And I think they'll do a good job at trying to talk up Donald Trump's successes as president. But there is reality. And when you're an incumbent, you run on reality. You don't run on message. So I don't care what they do in Jacksonville or Charlotte or wherever they end up. It can't change reality.
Looking at the reality on the ground in a place like Wisconsin, it's a purple state, notoriously purple now after having been part of the blue wall, won on very thin margins in 2016. What is your take as an outsider on Wisconsin, on the way Wisconsin is maybe going to tip in this new reality in November?
Well, all you Wisconsin residents, get ready to receive just an unprecedented number of robocalls from the campaigns, because I believe Wisconsin is very close. I think it will be very hard fought. I think the mobilization of the African-American community, particularly in Milwaukee, will be crucial, because we know that 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton underperformed from how Obama had performed in 2012. And so getting the African-American community numbers up for Joe Biden is going to be one of the most important things people can do. I think you're going to see a very, very active campaign in Wisconsin. It's clearly one of the most important states in the union as we move into November.
Elaine Kmark, thanks for sharing your thoughts on Lake Effect.
Thank you, Maya. Thank you very much.
That was Elaine Kmark, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute. She spoke with WUWM's Mayon Silver.